from Connect FM. This is Under Review, your weekly deep dive into the world of sports with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing.
The USA captured gold in men's ice hockey for the first time in 46 years. We'll recap the game and talk to Paul Steigerwald about the Penguins' upcoming return on Thursday.
The NFL Combine starts tomorrow. We'll discuss 10 storylines to watch over the course of the next 4 days and provide our thoughts on what the Steelers should do with the bevy of picks they have in the draft this year.
One Major League Baseball owner says fans care more about affordability than winning. Do we agree? We'll also talk about the passing of Bill Mazeroski. Did he hit the greatest home run in baseball history? I'm Dave Glass.
I'm Bob Anderson.
And I'm Dave Herzing. Stay tuned as we discuss these topics and more as we go Under Review.
Sponsored by Petula Eye Care, the False Creek Eagles, and Nebraska Plastic Surgery.
On Connect FM, your only local news radio.
Welcome to Under Review for February 25th, 2026. Again, we are recording on Tuesday, so any late breaking news we are not responsible for, but it's been a while since the three of us have been together. What's new, guys?
Not too much. Just been having a lot of fun downtime, not coaching right now, so that's a good thing. Just kind of getting some stuff done around the house.
There you
go. My wife has me busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I spent two weeks just kind of glued to the Olympics. And so now, you know, for me, not being a basketball guy, it's kind of these 3 days are a sports desert. So I'm a little shaky. It's like, all right, I want some hockey. I want something. Come on, let's go.
Cavs play the Knicks. Hey, Cavs and Knicks tonight, buddy. That should be a battle.
We'll turn Dave into a basketball fan.
It's going to happen one of these days. I can't wait.
I have to say that 2 weeks went really fast. It's like the opening ceremony and then it's the closing ceremony. It's all over.
I'll tell you what, I didn't get to watch as much of the Olympics as I wanted to, but the coverage I thought was pretty great. I thought just the kind of the vistas and the scenery and stuff over there was just so beautiful. My dad and I talked about that a lot, how just the backdrop of it was just spectacular. The stuff I did watch, though, was amazing. And, you know, we're going to talk about the U.S. men's team. Like, that was incredible, man.
Well, and to your point about the visuals, not only was the backdrops that good, but the camera work, the drones.
This was
the best visual Olympics. I think it's not even close. It was like, oh my goodness.
Some of the pictures that came out of the Olympics, there's some iconic photos already. Yep. But take a listen to this moment. All right, what will you guys remember the most about that game?
Connor Hellebuck. He got, I mean, a little bit of a hot take maybe, but he got absolutely screwed. He should have been the MVP.
His save percentage was
like 950-something for the whole tournament. They don't even come close to winning that game if he's just an average goalie. And, you know, there have been whispers in the past about Hellebuck in big games. I don't want to hear any of that ever again. That was the best big game goalie performance I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, that was really special. A strange thing that I took away, and it just shows you the power of Sidney Crosby around here and how much people love him. So many people I know that are Penguins fans but also hockey fans had a really difficult time taking sides solely because of Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
And it's funny, there were tons of things on X about that, fans that were conflicted, and it made it actually easier to root for the United States. Not that you weren't rooting for the United States anyways, but it's very difficult to root against 87. I don't think this is a hot take. I think if 87's out there, that game is different.
Yeah.
I think his leadership, that team, you could tell, The type of stuff that you saw on the bench, the chatter, just the steadiness of Sidney Crosby, I think would have really helped that team. They were gripping those sticks really tight as that game went on.
How about Nathan MacKinnon missing an open net?
We were talking about that before you came in here. That's 19 out of 20. I think he would make that.
Absolutely. He never misses from there. And then, Devon Taves missing that one from.
Well, that was a hell of a save.
Yeah, that was.
The MacKinnon
incredible.
One was wide open.
Yeah. Yes.
The Taves thing, you got to give Hellebuck all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
And then two clear breakaways plus the 5-on-3 kill. Yep. I mean,
the 5-on-3, when they killed that, I thought to myself, like you just said, I'm like, wow, this could happen.
Yep.
When they went 5-on-3, I was like, oh, here it is. Because,
yep.
I mean, 5-on-3 in most situations, that's a goal.
Here's the statistic I think that's really interesting for this tournament. The U.S. had 100% penalty kill.
Yes,
for the entire
right.
tournament.
Yep.
And I got to give Billy Guerin and Mike Sullivan some credit. When they put Trocheck and Miller on the team, I'm like, what are we doing here? I mean, really? You want those guys? Their penalty kill as forwards was amazing. And it's like they built the team specifically to have those roles. And, you know, it really worked out.
Well, how did you guys feel about 3-on-3 overtime deciding it?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I saw a lot of people say this. You might not like the rule, but everybody knew what it was. I don't want to hear any sour grapes about that. Canada had so many stud athletes. McDavid in 3-on-3 should be unstoppable. The one thing I did say, I turned to my wife as soon as it made overtime, like, this will not last very long. These teams are way too skilled to go 10 minutes into overtime. And, you know, I think that was right. And if we don't score, I think they score. I mean, it was going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I think maybe early on in the earlier rounds, I think it would have been
Before the elimination game.
But, you know, maybe as an adjustment for the next time here in 4 years. You know, if that elimination game goes to overtime, you need to have 5-on-5 hockey.
Here's my counterpoint to that. Do you like having the NHL players at the Olympics? I think most of us do. The owners are never going to push for that change. Look at all the injuries they had begin with.
I couldn't agree. Yeah.
You go 5-on-5 in overtime, you think those guys won't kill each other into the boards trying to get that golden goal?
Yeah.
Why would the owners okay that?
Yeah, you're walking a real fine line. And all the professional athletes, I mean, it doesn't matter what sport it is. You know, these owners, they talk about playing for your country. Those owners don't care. I mean, these guys are under contract. Well, they're going for bigger fish. You know, I mean, so I don't know.
That's a tough thing. Miss the playoffs because Crosby got hurt. Now, I'm not begrudging him the chance to go. I think it's great. But there's a huge effect. If he had really hurt his knee, forget it.
Oh, absolutely.
And the Kings are going to be without Kevin Fiala for the rest of the year, too. Yeah. So.
And that was gruesome. I felt really bad for him. That was unfortunate.
Who impressed you the most for the Americans? Aside from Hellebuck.
You know what, Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes really rose to the moment. I'll say our whole blue line. I thought, I like Jacob Slavin, and he had a really strong game against Canada. A lot of good stick positions. But when I look at, Hughes, that was, you know, how iconic is that to get your front teeth busted out and get the golden goal? But just, I thought our strength was clearly in goal, and we could hang with them on the blue line. I thought our forward group was very much inferior to theirs. And I think I'm not trying to knock our guys, but Canada's forward group, there's no better forward group anywhere.
No, yeah. The ice was so tilted in that game. I would just say the defense as a whole, because, I mean, they played their asses off. It was Hughes, the quote was, you know, he was talking, I think it was about Barstool or something, and he said, you know, I was going to be the GOAT because, you know, I took that high sticking penalty there, and then they put us, you know, put them on the power play, and then he turns around is the hero. Sports are funny like that.
Oh, it is. The ebbs and flows. How did you guys feel about Sully getting the gold medal there?
That's fine. Look, I'm happy. How can anybody in Pittsburgh not like Mike Sullivan? Look, the expiration date came. I'm glad we had him. I'm glad he left. And I'm glad that he won the gold. I mean, that's fine. And you know what? I like John Cooper. I want to, you know, you said you were rooting for the U.S. I mostly was, but I would have had no problem at all if Canada would have won.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. Honestly, me either. Because and the whole thing about U.S. and Canada right now, I wish that needs to get lost. I don't know what's going on with that. It's like, you know, we all have kids, right? You want to teach your kids to be graceful, you know, when they win and graceful when they lose.
I agree.
What's going on a little bit now? Hey, U.S., like, we get it. You won. Come on. So, yeah. What are we doing here?
And there was a little bit of sour grapes from Canada. I mean, yes, they were all like, too. Oh, you know, we should, you know, look, you know, and I know everybody's hurting right after the game. McKinnon's comments, I thought,
yeah,
were the best.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Canada fans are like, well, they, you know, that we, that's a, you know, we'll win 90% of that. Did you watch Canada play in the two previous rounds?
Yeah.
They easily probably they should have lost the last
game. They should have
lost.
So absolutely.
I don't want to hear
and
about
that's
how
when
dominant
Sid went down,
Canada.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah. They struggled when he went down.
Well, I don't want to put it all on him, but I do think that they really struggled with goal scoring. They had a whole pile of players only get 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
It was that top line. And then they didn't get much of anything, especially from the bottom six.
I'll tell you the one thing I liked is one of the reporters asked Crosby about a passing of the torch. And Crosby, he's not even media trained at this point. It's just pure class that comes out of that guy. And everything that he seems to say always seems to be the right thing at the right time. You know, he was disappointed. You could see it. They were standing on the ice. You could see the disappointment in his face. All the guys from Canada were disappointed. But you know... that decision to not play that game was weighing so heavily on him, and to be so unselfish and not put Canada in a position to have him out there injured. I mean, that again, that just speaks to the type of player he is.
100%. No doubt. And of course, there were parallels to the 1980 game, but I have to say, this was no miracle on ice.
I don't want to hear anything about the new
Thank
miracle.
Thank you. I was going to bring that up.
This is like a 60-40 game where Canada played towards the top end of their capabilities, and we got a great goaltending performance. I do think if it's a 7-game series, it probably goes 7. That is not a miracle. That is not a miracle. A miracle.
No.
If the U.S. and even Herb Brooks said it, if they play 10 times, Russia probably wins 9. I think that's right.
Yes.
I think that U.S. team in 1980, if you play a 7-game series, they lose 4-1. And if that's that, they have to get lucky for the one.
And yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it was amateurs versus professionals. You know, I get it. And NBC was really hammering
yes,
that miracle on ice. It was cool to see.
It was the same exact day in history.
Yeah, I mean, that is very cool.
It's not even
and by the way, shout out to Mike Tirico, sponsor. Alge was texting me. Mike Tirico is absolutely incredible. He does such a great job. And those the intermissions were really entertaining. Ruzioni being up there, giving his perspective. That was great. But it was not the Miracle on Ice Part 2.
Hey, shout out to them. Commercial-free broadcast.
I love that.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. Yeah. I was sure they'd take advantage of that and make a bunch of money in the commercials, and there was not one that I saw.
And
so.
I have to say, Edzo. Edzo did a great job breaking down the plays.
He said the
really
same
good.
Thing you did about the shortness of the over. He's like, this isn't going
to
go long.
Yep. And we have to give a shout out to the women, too, because they did the same thing. Won 2-1 in overtime against Canada, and they were dominant.
They were
the
much more
game.
Dominant. The women owned.
The U.S. team was so far and away the best team on the women's side. And I'm actually worried about the women staying as a medal sport because U.S. and Canada are so far ahead of the competition that it's kind of, the rest of the term is kind of a joke.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, it's time to get to a break. When we return, we're going to talk a little more hockey with Paul Staggerwald. You're listening to Under Review, sponsored by Fatola Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Nebraska Plastic Surgery.
You're listening to Under Review Sports Talk. More takes, more talk, more sports. Let's go back to the guys.
Welcome back. This segment is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. Reach out to Dr. Dan and his team for all your eye care needs. The Olympic break is over, and the Penguins begin back again on Thursday. And here to discuss that with us is a man who needs no introductions. Paul Staggerwald joins us on Under Review. Saggy, Nathan MacKinnon implied the better team lost in the gold medal game. Do you agree with him?
I think that the Canadian team played their best game of the tournament against the U.S. I was not thrilled at all times with their play during the tournament. I thought, in fact, going into the last game, it looked like to me like the U.S. was playing better hockey. But the Canadians, to their credit, in the second and third period pretty much dominated the game. But, you know, the goalie's part of your team, too, and you got to be able to beat that goaltender, and they couldn't beat Connor Hellebuck, and they certainly had more than enough chances to do that. And I felt like there were a couple of guys who could have been heroes. Instead, they were zeros, which is too bad for the Canadians but great for the U.S. But too many times people kind of separate the goalie from the rest of the team when they're talking about how good their team is, and I don't think you can do that. Goaltending is too important and too much a part of a team's success.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought up Hellebuck because, you know, there have been some, I'll call them whispers around about his play in the playoffs and in big game scenarios. And, you know, certainly throughout the tournament, I really thought he should have been MVP. We talked about that earlier. But do you think this takes that whole stigma away from him forever? Because he certainly came through when he was needed most.
Yeah, I think it completely does. You know, it's unfortunate that guys have to go through those sort of periods of adversity where they have to kind of have a breakthrough and do something that gets that monkey off their back. I can remember even going back to 1991 when the Penguins won the Stanley Cup, they used to say that about Tom Barrasso. And I remember in the handshake line, Mike Lang specifically saying, now you can look him in the eye and say, I can win the big game. You know, I remember, I'll never forget that because Mike was certainly aware of some of the criticisms of Tom Barrasso in that regard. You know, goaltending is a tough position. You don't play that position in a vacuum. It depends on how things are going in front of you. And sometimes just that extra block or that extra quick move to clear a puck or whatever it takes can really help a goalie. And then the goalie kind of feels confident and he starts to make saves. And pretty soon it all kind of comes together. Right? And I think that's what I mean about you can't put them in a vacuum. A lot of it has to do with how the team's playing in front of them. And then once they get some confidence, they feel like they can't be beat sometimes. And I felt that's what happened with Hellebuck. It's like he knew he was going to make the saves. And once you get that mindset, it's hard to beat a goalie. And I think he was in that special zone that players get in big moments.
Hey, Staggy, the big question in the hockey world, but the bigger question in Pittsburgh hockey world is the status of Sid. What's going on with him? I mean, yeah, they've been real tight-lipped about it. I don't know what your thoughts are, but to me it doesn't sound really good considering they haven't really given a lot of updates.
Well, you know how the NHL is, and the Penguins are no different, you know, with injuries. They're very guarded on that. It's kind of dumb because everybody knows he's got a leg injury and probably his right knee. I mean, just based on, you know, just watching the video. So it's kind of absurd to, like, not say what it is, lower body and all that crap. That's what they do in the NHL. I just think it's kind of dumb, especially now with all the gambling. I'm surprised they get away with it. But I would say that Sid has a pretty serious knee strain, like a ligament strain. It's not a tear. He doesn't need surgery. But they were talking about trying to fit him for a brace, which is really hard to do in just a couple of days short notice because there's a lot of measurements that take place. You have to have it custom made. He did say that, you know, he felt like he might be able to play even as soon as as close to the start of the gold medal game as the day before, but it just didn't come to pass. And, you know, I wondered if maybe he could play on the power play or something like that. We used to talk about that with Mario when he had a bad back, but I don't know if they had that discussion or not. You know, in retrospect, when you see that the Canadians had a 5-on-3 and they couldn't score, you think, boy, Sid might have been able to help them on that power play if that's all he did. I'm going to be curious to ask him tomorrow if they did even mention that. Like, well, what about just playing the power play? Or if they just didn't even, you know, go there. I don't know. But I do know that I have a line that I came up with after that game, and that is that I think the Canadians could have lost with Crosby, but they couldn't win without him. And that's really what it comes down to. And
I like that.
I think that's really true. I think he would have made the difference in that for them. And maybe even at 70%, he would have made the difference because of those power play opportunities we've talked about. But I definitely think there's something about him in big moments. He's got that flair for the dramatic. It doesn't have to be a goal either. It could be a great pass, some kind of a play that would have made the difference and given the Canadians the win. So it was very disappointing that he wasn't able to play. I was upset with the referee, Chris Rooney, who didn't call an interference penalty on Andre Palat when he knocked Crosby down in full flight and he went sliding into the boards. He got up, and then he got kind of attacked by Radko Gudas. He didn't say anything negative about Radko Gudas. He didn't feel that it was really his fault. He said his skate kind of slipped out from under him, and that's why he hurt his knee. But I thought that the penalty should have been called on an interference right before that. He never would have had to make any contact with Radko Gudas. But it's classic NHL stuff. Even though it's the Olympics, it was an NHL referee. He's looking at the best player in the game, you know, and he sees him get knocked down when he doesn't have the puck and he doesn't blow the whistle. We've been seeing that forever and ever and ever in Pittsburgh with Mario being abused. It gets old, but it's never going to change.
We're talking to Paul Stagerwald. I got to ask you, Kyle Dubas was busy today. He acquired Sam Girard and got a second round pick in exchange for Brett Kulak. Your thoughts on that trade, Staggy?
Well, I had a feeling teams would come calling for Brett Kulak because he is a UFA. He's the classic rental guy. He's gone to the Stanley Cup Finals three straight years. So I think a lot of teams might have coveted him, wanted to get him. It wouldn't surprise me if there were other teams calling Kyle Dubas on him. But and because of that, I think maybe that gave him a little bit more leverage to maybe add that second-round pick in the deal. You got a guy who really is of high pedigree. At one time, there were people raving about Sam Girard as a player. He had some personal issues. He had to go through, I think, a substance abuse program or one of those programs because he missed some time. And his former teammate, Eric Johnson, made mention of that today, said he came back a better man. So he's been through some personal adversity. But I think a lot of people have a lot of respect for the way he plays. He's not big. He's only 5'10", listed at 165, believe it or not. So he's built more like, I would say, like Connor Clifton is built, but he's more skilled than that. He's got he can really skate. He's got, you know, ability to pass the puck. He's creative. You know, he can make some moves and beat guys one-on-one. So he's got some skill back there, and he just gives you a good different, you know, tool set than what Brett Kulak. I like Brett Kulak. I thought he did a good job. He really helped Chris Letang, and I think he'll help the Avalanche. But, you know, the Penguins are making deals these days that help them in the short run and the long run. So this is a chance for Kyle Dubas to have a pretty high pedigree guy on their blue line next year. Granted, it's at $5 million, but I think they upgraded their defense for the future because they wouldn't even have had Brett Kulak next year unless they signed him as a free agent.
Boy, and you led right into something I was going to ask you about. According to Josh Yowie, the Penguins now have 34 draft picks in the next four drafts, including 20 in the first three rounds. And so that just speaks to what Kyle Dubas has done. And he just keeps buying low and selling high and buying low and selling high. Not that he's hit on everything he's done, but can you speak to just how hard that is to do? We've seen a lot of people talk about doing that, but it's amazing to me how he's been able to pull this off over the last, especially 18 months.
I agree. You know, when a guy says he's going to do something and then he goes out and does exactly what he said he's going to do, it's pretty impressive, right? I have to say he's done a really good job of parlaying, you know, players into draft picks, into, you know, draft capital, if you will. And I think that's really important because obviously you want to be able to draft good players for the future. You want to have more opportunities to make mistakes, if you know what I mean. Because, you know, the draft is like, it's kind of a crapshoot. So the more picks you have, the better your chance is really of being successful, I would say. And then the other side is you have them as draft capital to make, you know, deals. You can throw them into deals that you want to make, which is what they were able to do to get Igor Chinnikov from Columbus. So I think he's doing a fantastic job of following his plan. What I really like is that every time he gets a player, he's getting someone in that age range of 23 to 28, somebody who is still in the prime or just approaching the prime of his career, a guy who's going to be able to help them next year, the year after perhaps. Even an example of that is when they got Tommy Novak last year. He's really played well this year for the Penguins. They've got him signed for next year at $3.5 million. So they're in good shape in the middle, I think, with Tommy Novak, and now they've got this new defenseman on the blue line, and Igor Chinnikov was a fantastic acquisition. So he's just doing a great job, a great job. He should be GM of the year, actually.
I agree. Well, one last question. We're coming back in. The Penguins are in good shape right now in the standings, but if you look at the March schedule, it's absolutely brutal, not just in terms of the sheer number of games, but the quality of the opponents. Do you think they can hang on and sneak into the playoffs here?
I think they could. I'm worried about how Sid's absence will affect them. You know, I don't know how long he's going to be out. You know, he's so important to their team. I think they can probably tread water for a while without him. But, you know, if he's out for any longer stretch than maybe a couple of weeks, that could be a problem. I would expect he won't play till after the trade deadline, which really isn't that far away. It's March 7th. So my feeling is that Sid's absence is a real question mark right now in terms of how it's going to affect the team. That's kind of a fragile balance that they have. One thing I will say, you know, Sid wasn't playing great hockey prior to the break, and the team was winning despite that. And I think there's enough depth there and enough structure in their game, the way they play, that they should be able to compete. And it's just a question of if they can get that high-caliber goaltending, have good special teams play, I think they got a shot at, you know, getting enough points to stay in the race and then get into the playoffs.
Staggy, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you again for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the radio with you guys. Take care, everybody, and have a good time up there in Dubois.
And we appreciate it. Under Review is sponsored by Fatul Eye Care. We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles. The NFL Draft Combine is this week, and that's something that I will be watching. How about you guys?
I got to be honest with you, Bob. I know you love it. I don't watch the Combine.
No, nope, like, at all. How about some highlights? Aren't too many, are
no,
there?
No, I think the Combine used to be much more valuable. A lot of these guys sit out.
Yeah, that is a bummer.
Yeah, like Mendoza, for instance, he's doing a private thing.
And get lost to that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's some value in it still if you're somebody that has to show out and maybe turn some heads that maybe you haven't had the opportunity to do so or whatever. But it's not something I put a heck of a lot of stock in.
You really want me to talk about this? All right, I'll talk about it. I think the combine is maybe the most overrated thing in major sports because you're not, I don't care how many times a guy can bench press 200 pounds. I care whether he can play football. I'm much more interested in the tape. I'm much more interested in, now, the one thing they do that I think is very valuable, especially for skill positions like quarterback, are those interviews and you get a sense of how they interact with people because, you know, you want your quarterback to be a leader and I think those things are important. Not even the wonder. I'm talking about the,
I'm teasing.
Because that can really discriminate against people who are not good at tests and stuff like that. Everybody learns a little bit differently, but I just remember there have been so many cases in the past 20 years where, somebody had this great combine and he zips up the board. And you know what? They find out he can't actually play football. You know, Mike Mamula for the Eagles is the king of that. Do you remember him?
That's
like 25 years ago. And he was like, he's the best combine player. Well, can he actually play football?
I think one of the only teams that really likes the combine are the Raiders. The Raiders seem to get these guys that all run like 4.23 40s and
Well, it is a new regime there. And a little shout out. We're hoping to get the Raiders' new offensive coordinator on here in the next week or two.
That'd be fantastic. That's a great guest.
The only reason we didn't get him this week is because he's going to the combine.
Yeah.
Clearfield Zone, Andrew Janoco. Yeah. So we're very excited about that possibility.
Yeah, I think you're right, guys. I think the more important stuff is what happens off the camera. So, you know, the measurables, the medical checks, those sorts of things. But I do enjoy watching the 40 times
come
in. You are
addicted. There's nothing about the NFL. Like, you would watch them doing their legal contracts, I think. Yeah,
I honestly cannot wait. My brother and I were talking about you the other day.
Oh, my goodness.
Because we're going to the draft, right? And D goes... He goes, I swear to God, he goes, I would absolutely love to be in Bob's house watching him watch that draft.
He's coming down. You're not going to the draft?
Well, what day are you guys going?
We're going the first day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I can't believe Bob wouldn't be at the draft.
Listen, well, then we're going to have to call in D.
He's coming.
Okay. No, I mean, we're going to have to call you guys.
Yeah, well, you should go to the draft. Bob, you're 2 hours away from one of your favorite things in the world, and it's free. Bob, it's a free thing.
All right.
I mean, I'm not going, but I am stunned that you're not going.
The only issue of getting to the draft is actually going to be getting down to the North Shore.
Yeah.
I mean, it is going to be a hassle. I was reading an article, it was in the Tribune Review, they were talking about logistics for it, right?
Okay.
And there's no like real mass transit options in Pittsburgh. So,
That is not a mass transit.
They're telling people straight up, you better get there early. Like, it's going to be just
imagine trying to get a hotel room.
The rooms are like $2,000 a night, I think. Yeah.
All right. Well, CBS Sports put out an article entitled 10 Storylines to Watch During NFL Combine Week. I thought we'd run through a few of these and talk about them. Some we may have a lot to say, some we may not have any. But number one was Ty Simpson will throw at the combine. So we talked about Mendoza not throwing. I think this is the event that actually would help a guy like Ty Simpson if he has a good combine. So should he be on the Steelers draft radar in round one, guys?
Well, I got to tell you something. I just saw it before I came here. Mel Kiper thinks the Steelers are going to go after him.
Wow.
Mel Kiper, he's always right.
He sure, yeah, but you know what, though? Why not go after him?
Well, I'll tell you why not. Because he's played 15 games. I'm sick and tired of taking guys on potential that don't have enough on tape. All I got to say is Jones. Remember the offensive tackle?
Oh, Broderick Jones.
Yes. Another one of these. Oh, he's got all these measurables, but he didn't play that much, yeah. And he was raw. And by the way, Simpson really, really flamed out the last half of the year.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't look at him, but I'm very leery of anybody who's got a very limited amount of tape, and half that tape is bad.
Well, yeah, again, 15 games is nothing. Who was that a few years ago that these guys get lost in the shuffle. He was like from a small school or whatever, and he was limited.
Trey Lance,
that's it. Perfect example. He, you know, what did he ever do?
Well, nothing. Richardson is the ultimate example for the Colts. Did he go number
Anthony
four? Richard.
Yes.
Number four, and he's nothing. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. No disrespect, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but in the NFL, he did not work out at all.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing I think about, instead of wasting your first round pick, you know, last week, it was a great segment, by the way, about, the draft, and the guest we had. You read about it, it's a receiver-rich draft. They said there's 19 receivers that are just unbelievable. Hey, Steelers.
Yeah, it's a receiver.
We could use that,
for
sure.
Yeah, get a receiver, for God's sake.
If Simpson's still there in the second or certainly in the third, that's when you want to go for a project.
It's Aller time in the third,
I'm
maybe.
Just really, well, by the way, we should probably talk about this a little bit. Do you remember a year ago when everybody was looking at this is the quarterback draft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It completely disintegrated.
It sure did.
Now they're saying next year is the quarterback year.
They're saying next year might be the best quarterback draft in 10 years.
And just a great draft in general. Jeremiah Smith next year, too.
And I'm not as good with these names. The LSU quarterback who got... He ended up, he was hurt.
Is that Nussmeier?
Yeah, Garrett Nussmeier.
That's the one I would want the Steelers to look at in the third or fourth round.
Okay.
Because, his stats went down, but it turned out he had an oblique injury. He was lights out last year. I'm always interested in guys who were good, maybe as sophomores and juniors, and then had a bad senior year.
That would be Drew Aller.
No. Drew Aller had problems the year. Remember, I was down on Drew Aller before the season.
I know.
It's his footwork, guys.
Listen, my head's going to explode if Aller gets. If the Steelers picked up Aller, I swear to God, I would go nuts. I would literally. There'd be so much hand wringing going on in my house because I would want him to do so well, but deep down, I know he probably wouldn't do all that well. So whatever.
Hey, Christian Hackenberg.
We're 100%.
Yeah.
We're 7 minutes in, guys. We've only got through one.
All right, that's all right.
How about Reuben Bain's arm length? Does that bother you?
That's the kind of stuff I don't like.
I was just going to say, Dave's not buying it.
Under
into
31
that.
Inches. That's Whatever. In the first percentile for what? NFL red rusher.
Can he sack? Can he beat guard and tackles or not? That's all I care about.
Well, Aaron Donald also had short arms, I will say.
Okay. Then you just answered your own question.
Jermod McCoy's medicals. Apparently he was maybe going to be the top corner even into if he would have came out last year. He didn't play a single down this year because of the ACL. He's from Tennessee.
He's a perfect one. I'd love to get like top of the second round, late first round.
How about a 21?
I want a receiver, Bob.
Okay.
I want a receiver.
Dave, I'll tell you what. That's exactly I was talking to my brother. Hey, Stairway. Get a receiver.
Get a receiver. You got a deep
somebody.
Draft. There's going to be a good one there. Yeah. Don't overthink this.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a tier. There's like top three that they're saying. But then there's another guy, Denzel Boston, who could be a good get too. So
I don't want them to reach for anything. Now, and again, that's Tennessee corner. He's another one. Great as a junior. Yeah. I mean, an ACL injury, you should be able to come back from that. So I'm not really worried about that.
It's not like it's not an Achilles or anything like that.
All right. The running back market. What's your impression of Jeremiah Love? And is he worth a top 10 pick? Because usually running backs are not.
No. Absolutely not. Look
Dave's
what happened with Jenty.
Yeah, he
Don't
is
take the running back in the top 10. It's silly.
Love is an incredible back. But you know what? There's going to be another one. And then there's going to be another one after him. And then there's going to be another one after him. Top 10, the way the NFL is constituted right now, I would never, ever draft a running back in the top 10.
Todd McShay has him as his number one player.
Well, good. Well, you know what? Good luck. You just can't. If you're that bad, are you a running back away from being good? And running backs have short
That's the main issue too. Right there. These guys, I mean, the game is so much different now. We've talked about this before, but it really is. There's no way I would do that. Running back is, it seems like a position, not seems like, it is a disposable position. I mean, and look, Look what the Eagles with Saquon. Look at him this year. Last year, Saquon in the MVP discussion.
Look at Pittsburgh. I mean, they didn't spend huge draft capital on those backs, and they had pretty good backs this year.
And they took Najee Harris in the first round. That wasn't a good use of picks.
Nope.
The Steelers have a bunch of picks, though. They have 12 draft picks this year. I know the intent was to trade up, get a quarterback this year. So what do you do with all those picks? Do you try to package them and move up and get a really good player? Do you try to just, you know, stockpile players, or do you maybe try to get some guys for next year?
I think the issue is, you know, there's really no veteran quarterback out there that this, I mean, who's out
Willis.
There?
Willis is the only
Malik
one I'm interested
Willis
in.
Other than, I mean, you don't want Kyler Murray or someone like that. I mean, on the fan, I'm down in Pittsburgh a lot before, you know, I've told you that before, and they're like, well, you know, I think we should give Mason Rudolph a chance. Get out of here. What are we doing? Mason Rudolph is not the answer in Pittsburgh. My gut tells me Rodgers comes back, which stinks, but I'm feeling that's going to be the case.
When they hired McCarthy, that was almost a
So back to your thing about the draft picks, Bob. What I think they should do with them is do something with them for next year.
That would be the best thing.
You know, to get another first round pick or something like that. I would try to do that.
I'm willing to go along with any of the above. I don't want them to like package a whole bunch and get into the top 10 for, I just don't think they're not one player away. Okay. I think we all can agree on that. But if you have a guy you're targeting, maybe you take one of your third round picks and you move up a little bit or you move back a little bit. And what, you know, really, and we'll talk about this in the other segment probably, but what Kyle Dubas is doing, you know, he makes a trade and then the guy gets better and then he's stockpiling assets, and then he can make a big splash when he wants to.
Yeah.
That's, and having 12 picks is great. It gives you a ton of flexibility.
Yep. And honestly, like I said this last week, I really do think that Pittsburgh's going to be moving a lot this year. I think just the wow factor of having the draft in Pittsburgh, I think that's going to maybe change some things for how they operate or how they would normally operate. My gut really does tell me that. I mean, think about it. They didn't have the type of year they wanted to have. Yeah, they made the playoffs, but I really think they're going to do some big things at the draft.
This is a big year for your buddy, the con artist. He needs a big draft.
He does. And I don't know, some of the decisions he's made lately has me a little off the con artist. But hey, the defensive linemen and linebackers work out tomorrow. Maybe Dave and Dave will change your tune and and actually watch some of that.
Olympics.
The eight ball says outlook not promising.
That's right.
All right, that'll do it for this segment. When we come back, we'll touch on some quick hitters. Under Review is sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles. Keep it right here on Connect FM.
You're listening to Under Review Sports Talk. More takes, more talk, more sports. Let's go back to the guys.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Lebraska Plastic Surgery, where they help you look and feel your best. It's time for some quick hitters, and I thought we'd start with the Angels owner. What is it, Arte Moreno?
Yep, that's
okay.
Right.
He spoke with reporters last week and said the fans want affordability, they want safety, they want a good experience when they come to the ballpark, and believe it or not, winning is not in their top five. Those are his words. Do you guys agree with that?
I couldn't disagree more. I've been around sports my whole life. Dee, you've been around sports your whole life. We see it constantly. When the team stinks, attendance goes down, apathy goes up. Of course you want a winner. You want all those other things too, but winning is, it drives attendance. You were just saying this off the air, Dee. It's a ridiculous statement to cover his own butt for being a terrible owner.
Yeah, I mean, that franchise is abysmal. They had Ohtani and Trout at the height of their powers and they stunk. Right? They
did. Horrible.
So get out of here.
That's the hard part, is getting the stars, and they couldn't build anything
around them. And they were in a market. I get it. It's a Dodger town, especially now.
That's an excuse. They had all the money in the world. They just
blew. Of course they did. Listen. Pittsburgh is a microcosm of all things sports, right? You look at the Pirates, right? When they were red hot for those three years, getting tickets to that was like the greatest thing ever. Going to those games, the environment, on a Tuesday night, you'd be there, and they'd be playing the White Sox, and people were invested in every pitch. They'd be playing the Mariners, games that people don't care about. People were out in droves to watch those games. When the Pirates started to stink, what happened? Nobody showed up. Case in point, look at the Penguins. They went back-to-back Stanley Cups. Those years there, they were right on the edge of doing some stuff, and then they obviously didn't make the playoffs for a few years. What did people do? They stopped going. Look at what's happening now.
Interest
is up. The Pens are red hot. They're playing good hockey. That is the dumbest statement in the world from an idiotic owner.
And if you're not going to win, at least you have to have hope, okay? With the Penguins, I didn't even care if they made the playoffs this year. As long as they were doing the right things and building the right way, which they've been doing, and they've been winning, that's a bonus. But for him, I mean, that franchise is stale as moldy bread.
Yeah.
And for him to say that, it's like, I just wanted to bring it up on the air because I read that and I'm like, what an idiot. Who actually thinks this?
And look, hey, we're no stranger to idiotic owners.
No, agreed.
I mean, but I'll tell you what, Nutting doesn't make stupid statements like that.
No, he doesn't, definitely does not.
Well, I will say to what your point was, the Angels, they had the 13th in MLB for total attendance. They didn't do too bad because they were 72-90 last year. The Pirates, they had the fifth lowest last year MLB attendance.
But to his point, you're in Anaheim, you're in the LA market. Of course you're going to have,
there's more
people. And by the way, it's 75 and sunny every day there.
Yeah, so it's a different vibe altogether. Yeah. And the thing is, the Angels, West Coast apathy for sports is real. Those fans don't care like East Coast fans care. Going to those games, unless you're a Dodgers fan, right? And actually, Dodgers fans get there late. That's the running joke of being a Dodgers fan. They leave early, right? Pirates fans, Phillies fans, you know, Guardians fans, obviously Yankees, Red Sox. Those fans are involved, right?
But even you're right to a point, but I still would say they'd be a lot higher in attendance if they had gone 95
no and question 70 about it. No
with,
question
with Ohtani
about it.
Back in the day.
Yes.
Well, and I was just going to make the point. Pirates averaged about 19,000 fans per game last year. Compare that to 2015. That's the last time they made the postseason. They were up around 31,000 a game. So
you know,
there's your evidence right there.
I was at so many of those games in that three-year run. I was at all the playoff games. I mean, those summers were incredible. Watching those games, it was appointment television. You were hanging on the standings. Yep. Like I remember as a kid watching the Pirates in the 90s, it felt the exact same way. And I'll tell you something. This year, we're going to talk about the Pirates a lot. This year, the Pirates are going to surprise some people. I'm telling you,
I'm looking forward to talking about the Pirates.
I am extremely optimistic about the Pirates this year. I don't think it's fool's gold. I really don't.
Well, we'll have to save that for later. Yeah. I know Dave's got something to say over there, but let's talk about former second baseman, for the Pirates, Hall of Famer Bill Mazeroski died on Saturday. He was obviously before our times, but there's a statue of him outside of PNC Park for a reason. His walk-off home run in Game 7 of the World Series has been called the most legendary home run in baseball history. Do you guys agree?
Yes.
I think there's a couple possibilities, but I think yes. And, you know, that was one of the biggest upsets. You want to talk about a real David versus
Goliath. Yeah, the Yankees hammered them.
The Yankees should have won that series.
They outscored them 55-27 in that series.
Every game that the Pirates were in, they won, and the three they lost, they got absolutely hammered. My grandfather used to talk. He would light up talking about the 1960 Pirates because they weren't even supposed to be there, right? I mean, the Pirates were terrible in the 50s and they weren't that great in the early 60s. This was the one, it's like a fluke. And yeah, so that, the real irony of this is of all the hitters, he wasn't a power hitter.
No.
He was like a 260 hitter, kind of, you know, every once in a while he'd run into one, but not very often.
And I'll tell you what,
defense was his calling card.
Yeah.
That's the reason he made the...
And he's best known for that hit.
Yeah, well, and people argue he's arguably one of the best defensive second basemen of all time.
I think he is the best defensive second baseman.
I mean, and what was cool, they were talking, Neil Walker was on The Fan, and he was also on the Pirates broadcast talking about how, Mazeroski helped resurrect his career. Because they couldn't figure out what to do with Neil Walker and they put him at second and then Maz worked with him.
Wow.
And he said Maz really changed it. And the coolest thing, my dad always talks about this. That was my dad's favorite player, obviously Clemente as well. My dad loved Maz. My dad could talk about Maz from now until next year. And he talked about one of his favorite stories is after he hit the home run and there's bedlam going on in Pittsburgh. He sat on a bench with his wife in Schenley Park and just watched everything just go. He just was a young kid. And he just watched the world go by. They said anyone who's ever was around Maz, I met Maz once just briefly, and everyone said he was the most kind, humble, gracious human being in the world. Rest in peace. What a Pirates legend.
For sure. The only one that I thought might be up there is that Kirk Gibson home run. where he did it basically on
one leg.
Well,
Joe Carter has a case.
Okay. Yeah,
it was game six, not game seven.
Yeah.
I really, you know what? The Kirk Gibson one, obviously, but that was game one. I mean, it was a big home run, but it's hard for me to ever have a game one. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's like, oh, that set them up. They still had to win three more games.
Well, and it shows the last, again, we just talked about fans here two seconds ago. Look, there's people that go on the anniversary of that home run. They go out in Oakland and there's
every year
and they listen to the broadcast. Yep. That is so freaking cool. I told my dad, I want to get there and do that one day, or one year, excuse me. I think that would just be incredible to listen to the broadcast of that game.
Man, and just to put a pin on it though, his defense, if you ever saw a video of him turning a double play, what he did was magic. Like the transfer, it was so fast. Mm-hmm. Even modern guys don't do it that
fast.
And
I'll tell you, he was with the Pirates for a long time. He was a bucko, buddy.
Yep.
Dee, I got to ask you about that Pistons game last night. Pistons, Spurs, some are saying that is an NBA final preview.
Very much so. I'll tell you what, both those teams are dangerous. That was two of the six best teams in the NBA. Tonight, actually, the Knicks and the Cavs play. Knicks and the Cavs have similar odds. The Cavs are slightly, I think they're fifth best in the NBA to win the title. I think Knicks are sixth best. But it's Pistons. OKC has the best odds. Then it's the Pistons. Then it's the Spurs.
Yeah, it seems to be like five or six teams that are
clearly above the rest. The Land, I love the Land. The Land's not going to win a chip. OKC right now is the best team. They are injured. They're playing without the MVP. I'll tell you what though, San Antonio, I don't know if it's this year. They've beaten OKC this year and they have the most wins against, the top teams in the NBA this year. They have seven wins against teams in the top five. But I'll tell you what though, San Antonio's coming. They have a hell of a roster and Wemby is the real deal. He is so much fun to watch, but Lonnie's Pistons, that team is, they remind me of the 80s bad boy Pistons.
Scrappy.
They are scrappy.
Physical.
They are physical.
Yeah.
That team is tough. They are fun to watch. Nobody wants to see that team in the
best
East.
Of seven, yeah.
The Celtics are a dangerous team too. They put it on my Lakers. Holy cow, did they hammer the Lakers the other night. On Sunday Night Basketball, James Worthy went off. The Lakers were soft as baby food. I mean, it was not a good look for the Lakers.
Yeah, but your Lakers are being outscored on the year, which is a bad sign.
Yeah.
But when I'm just looking at this, OKC has the biggest point differential. I had no idea Detroit was good.
Yeah.
By the way, that's how little I've paid attention. You guys are talking about
the Pistons are unbelievable.
Like, whoa, they were terrible two years ago.
So were the Spurs. They were bad.
I'm happy for the Spurs finally coming out of the doldrums. They've been down for a while. So that's very interesting to me.
And again, that just shows you what, you know, a league does that is able to have a good draft and teams and franchises. You can turn it around,
yep.
Right? I mean, that's why the NFL is so popular and the NBA is no different. Some of the teams though, they do need to address the tanking issue in the NBA and they've talked about that. Adam Silver was on NBA radio talking about that. They're going to have to take some measures to this because there are so many teams right now that are truly
five or six.
The battle for
the
bottom.
Five or six teams are just so bad.
And when you watch them play, it's just like, what is even happening here? It's really bad basketball.
That in hockey, they used to do that. And that's the only reason Mario Lemieux was a Penguin because they tried so hard to suck that year. I mean, if you listen to EJ talk about it, the lengths they went to lose the last month of the year.
It was great.
Are legendary.
And it worked out for us, buddy.
It did.
They might not be here if that didn't happen.
I'm going to tell you something. I don't think they would. Hey, also shout out, Netflix. I'm sorry. Amazon Prime has a documentary about the ABA and the origins of the ABA and how it led to the style of the NBA basketball, what's called Soul Power. Unbelievable. It talks about the Pittsburgh Pipers, which turned into the Pittsburgh Condors. Really great documentary. And the ABA was wild, man. Like there were fights. And it was like old school hockey.
I don't like fights.
Yeah.
All right. It's time to get out of here, guys.
I say get lost in this snow.
Yes.
Mother Nature, old man winter, we've had it. I'm waving the white flag here. Get lost to this snow. Let's bring on some spring.
I'm first of all, hashtag get lost to spring training games. Don't pay attention to them except for the injuries. It's always somebody who's the latest and greatest. The other thing I want to say is I want to back up Staggy. I'm so tired of referees that don't call the rules, especially in the Olympics. That was kind of ridiculous.
I agree with that, too. I'm going to say hashtag get lost to the people who say that winning gold is better than winning the Stanley Cup. I'm sorry. You won six games. The Stanley Cup, you got to win 100+. There's no comparison.
I agree. Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win in sports.
Without question, the Stanley Cup. I've said that for years. If you win that Stanley Cup, that is the most brutal gauntlet of all the things to win.
That'll do it for this week's show. Don't forget to search for Under Review on Spotify. For Dave Glass and Dave Herzing, I'm Bob Anderson. We'll see you next week.